in the last hour with Christy Fulnecki, which will be up in podcast form, lickety-split, if you missed any of it. One of the things that we talk about is China. I reference the upcoming author of the week, which is sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And the upcoming book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. Now, the author is one of the foremost authorities on China. And I think when you have a book, and he does a series, there are a series of these books, Politically Incorrect Guide to This and That, people oftentimes may infer that it is like a sarcastic humor, poking, you know, trying to poke the liberals a little bit by being politically incorrect. That's not what this is. This is a book of information of a very serious nature. And the reason, my inference, that it is listed as politically incorrect is because it is just that. This is not what you're supposed to talk about. These are not the things you're supposed to talk about. You know, Fauci is science itself. The closest thing you can get to God, the communist Chinese are wonderful partners and we can trust them when they tell us that this was not any sort of lab leak situation, whether that is intentional or otherwise. And he is an expert in all these areas. And so that's what this is about. And so, again, I throw that out because politically incorrect oftentimes is utilized as a reference to something that is humorous or sarcastic, and that's not what this is. So I think it'll be a very insightful interview, that coming up here in just a couple of moments. Jason Ryman now with the latest news update.
A few strong to severe storms are in the forecast today, but the National Weather Service says not everyone will get rain. Scattered storms are in the forecast through the afternoon. Strong winds will be the biggest threat for many storms. Springfield police have arrested a woman for shooting her daughter at a local business.
30-year-old Christiana Rodriguez is charged with assault, armed criminal action, and other counts. Police were called to Cox South Hospital for a report of an 11-year-old girl shot in the chest. Rodriguez said she removed one bullet from a gun and then pulled back the slide, firing a second bullet. She told police it was accidental.
That's George Lawson reporting. The Branson Board of Aldermen considering a plan to build housing for international students. Chris Maslin has more.
The first phase of the project would build two dorm-style apartments with around 520 beds for international students in Branson for about 18 weeks out of the year. The city owns over 11 acres off Green Mountain Drive where the proposed housing complex would be located. Three additional buildings could be placed on that proposed site behind Branson Fire Station 3 based on demand.
And there's less than a week to go before the August primary in Missouri. You can listen to interviews with the candidates for Senate and Congress at KSGF.com. You can also see what's on the ballot where you live. I'm Jason Rima, Springfield's Talk 104.1.
First Alert Forecast is sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Partly sunny, showers and storms likely, as Rima mentioned there, possibility of some of those maybe kind of severe, high of 89 today. Scattered showers, storm 70 tonight. Showers and storms Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with highs in the upper 70s to lower 80s. Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books, coming up next. Here's the latest traffic.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, Thursday, which means it is Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. Of course, we have our digital Author of the Week section at KSGF.com. But just as importantly, perhaps more importantly, at ABC Books, they have an actual physical section of books that are highlighted in our Author of the Week segment. As always, a huge thank you to them. This week, today, we're talking with Stephen Mosier. He's a leading authority on China and holds an advanced degree in the biological sciences. So that just based on that information, you may have a clue as to what the subject matter may be. And the book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. I thank you for being here with us this morning. COVID-19, I'm telling you, it has just been such a mind-boggling couple of years how it is that, quote, science is expected to be accepted and our relationships with other countries. And it's still one of the questions that some of us seem to have an interest in, yet others apparently don't, and that is the origins of COVID-19. When it comes to that question, what is it that we do know about the origins of COVID-19?
Well, what I said 2 years ago now, almost 2.5 years ago, in the pages of the New York Post and other places in February of 2020, was that all roads led to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. There was no question they were doing gain-of-function research. There's a whole paper trail of papers going back 10 years, some of which were co-signed by American scientists like Peter Daszak of EcoHealth Alliance, and Ralph Barrick of the University of North Carolina, working with the head of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Dr. Shuzhong Li, who was trained in the United States at Fauci-funded labs. So no question they were doing gain-of-function research, only they weren't doing it for noble scientific purposes. They weren't doing it to advance the frontiers of human knowledge. They were doing it to develop bioweapons. And I say that knowing that China has a long history of having a bioweapons program, really going back to the founding of the People's Republic of China in 1949 and continuing to the present day. And what we did was we handed over to them a means of making viruses more infectious and more deadly. And we actually paid them to collect bat coronaviruses. And we trained them how to do gain-of-function research in the lab. And, of course, the People's Liberation Army bioweapons experts said, wow, that's wonderful. America is giving us the technology and funding to actually develop dangerous viruses. How shall we use them, they said to themselves. And there's a secret speech I talk about in the book that was given in 2017 by the head of the bioweapons program, a Major General Chun. Chun Wei is her full name. And Major General Chun Wei said this. She said, first you need the spear, then you can develop the shield. The spear is the coronavirus that we've all been living with, and some of us have been dying with the last 2.5 years. The shield is the vaccine. So they had the coronavirus in 2019. I believe they were working on a vaccine when it leaked out in Wuhan during vaccine trials. As sometimes happens, you know, you use an attenuated vaccine and sometimes people get the real disease. And once that happened, they then deliberately spread it around the world, thinking that China shouldn't suffer alone from this coronavirus, that everyone should receive the pointy end of the spear. And that's what happened. So when people say, did it leak from the lab or was it deliberately released? The answer is both. It came out of the lab during vaccine trials and then it was deliberately released, plane loads of people, some of whom were carrying the virus, human disease vectors, you might call them, were sent to cities like Milan and New York and other places. And we've all been living with the consequences.
So I think the conventional wisdom based on information that has been provided public consumption is that, maybe at some point China recognized, this thing, whether it leaked or otherwise. But those who came here and through other parts of the world, that wasn't anything that in any way, shape, or form was under the control of the Chinese. You think that was deliberate, that the Chinese government, I mean, I think this is what you're saying, they took people they knew had COVID, put them on planes, and sent them through parts of the world, including the United States, in order to spread this?
No, I mean, look, the Chinese people are the first and foremost victims of the Chinese Communist Party. They have been since the founding of the People's Republic of China. Tens of millions have been killed in various political campaigns, starved to death after the Great Leap Forward. And they were the first and foremost victims of this, what was obviously a bioweapons program. But what China did, what the Chinese Communist Party did, leaders like Xi Jinping in Beijing, they knew that Wuhan had a dangerous epidemic. And they shut down planes from Wuhan, the city of Wuhan, a city of 12 million people, to other Chinese cities. But they let planes from Wuhan travel all around the world. So I'm not saying that individual Chinese were used as disease vectors. I'm saying that the disease was spreading and they put in place a travel protocol that would infect the world. So I think that was deliberate. And, you know, you look back in 1958. And 68, we had the Asian flu and the Hong Kong flu. Those both originated in China. China didn't say a word about it. Tens of thousands of Chinese lay dying. And they didn't say they had a dangerous new virus on the loose, and it became a pandemic in 58, killed a million people. In 68, it was called the Hong Kong flu. It didn't come from Hong Kong. It came from mainland China across the border. The Chinese authorities hid it from the World Health Organization and allowed it to spread to the rest of the world. So these people have a history of doing the same thing. There's a pattern here.
We're talking with our author of the week, Stephen Mosher, president of the Population Research Institute and leading authority on China. The book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. One of the things that I don't know that it gets asked or talked about publicly so much, but has always been something that has scratched at my mind, is why do we even engage in this sort of research with China, given the history, given the potential danger, given our current relationship that has, while economic relationships, there's certainly adversarial components over the past several years with China. Like, of all of the countries, why would we have that relationship when it comes to these sort of potential bioweapon components, have that relationship going on with China?
Well, that's exactly the question that I would like to ask Dr. Anthony Fauci under oath, because his original pandemic sin, okay, this goes back to 2010, when he's arguing in the pages of the Washington Post for funding gain-of-function research. And his idea was, we're going to create monster viruses in the lab so we can then develop vaccines to prevent the next pandemic that emerges on the world. And everybody said, a lot of more sensible people than Dr. Fauci said, wait a minute, Tony, you're going to develop monster viruses in the lab. What happens if they get out of the lab before you have a vaccine? Answer that question. Well, he pushed forward with his $6.1 billion budget, that's a billion with a B, and was funding it in the United States. Finally, cooler heads, more sensible people, wiser people said, we're going to put a moratorium on gain-of-function research. So what Dr. Fauci did was he shut down, stopped funding the research at the University of Texas Galveston Labs and University of North Carolina Lab run by Ralph Baric, and he moved it overseas, not just to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, although that was a big collection center for coronaviruses. We paid people at the Wuhan Institute of Virology to collect literally hundreds of bat coronaviruses, and we taught them how to do gain-of-function research. So he moved the research overseas. I believe, in my personal opinion, that's in violation of the moratorium on gain-of-function research. He hid the funding by sending it to EcoHealth Alliance, and then a subcontractor of EcoHealth Alliance was the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So I think that's the original pandemic sin. Without his obsession with gain-of-function research, I don't think we'd be in the state that we're in today. So, you know, millions of people have died. Trillions of dollars in economic damage have been caused. There's a lot of blame to go around. It starts with China, but it certainly doesn't end there.
So Fauci has a long history, long relationship in the buildup to what would become this pandemic. And then, of course, he is largely, essentially put in charge of trying to deal with the mess. You wrote a piece, I believe it last week, that appeared in the New York Post, maybe some other places as well, 5 mistakes that Dr. Anthony Fauci made on COVID that spelled disaster. I mean, when you, to me anyhow, look at this objectively, the guy seems like somewhat of a train wreck who doesn't have any idea what he's doing. He makes all these mistakes. I mean, talk to us about your assessment of that.
Well, I mean, look, during the first year of the pandemic, Anthony Fauci was a study in confusion. He didn't know whether the virus was lethal, how lethal. He was saying one thing in private. He was saying another thing in public. He didn't know how contagious it was, whether it could be spread asymptomatically. He seemed to take China's word for everything, which is always a mistake because the Chinese Communist Party actually never produces any data that is accurate. It produces numbers that reflect well on itself, right? The numbers, the data are always massaged. So when the Chinese Communist Party said there's no human-to-human transmission, and their proxy at the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, said there's no human-to-human transmission, Fauci took that as gospel. And it's simply not true. It allowed the virus to spread in the United States and other countries because of that misunderstanding. And then, you know, the guy has been in a lab his entire life. He understands viruses like nobody else, but he's never put a stethoscope on the chest of a living, breathing human being. And so he's not familiar with what you should do with a highly infectious respiratory virus. You know, he spent hundreds of millions of dollars and literally millions of man hours doing contact tracing. Now, contact tracing is great if you're dealing with a sexually transmitted disease where you have a limited number of contacts. But for a highly infectious respiratory virus, it's just a waste of resources. We never do it for the seasonal flu. Why? Because it doesn't work. He failed to protect the vulnerable. He was told by people, heroes like Scott Atlas and Jay Bhatia of Harvard, that all we need to do is protect the elderly and the immune compromised and let everybody else get along with their business, get along with their life. And he said no. He said that's wrong. That's insane. And so we all had to suffer unnecessarily. He closed the schools, which made no sense because kids get the sniffles. They don't get serious cases. They don't get hospitalized the way that elderly people and the immune compromised do. And we know from Sweden, Sweden didn't close its schools. And guess what? They didn't have the kids there, didn't get hospitalized, didn't die. The teachers didn't get hospitalized and didn't die in large numbers. So we closed the schools, deprived kids of a year or two of education, which will haunt them for the rest of their life, by the way. You know, the lifespans are pegged to your level of education. The more you know, the longer you live. We've deprived kids of a year or two of education. I'm afraid it's going to shorten their lifespan just on that alone, not to mention all the problems with depression, drug use, and so forth. In the beginning, he talked about natural immunity. He said, you know, if this virus is like every other virus we've ever come in contact with, once you have it, you'll probably have pretty good natural immunity that will protect you from getting seriously ill and dying in the future. And then in public, he was saying something completely different. And of course, his original pandemic sin we've talked about, the original sin was funding the Chinese labs. So I think every mistake in the I listed five, but I could have listed 10. I mean, this guy has been a train wreck. And we're the ones who are riding in the train, right? The engineer doesn't know where he's going. He's off the track. He's in a head-on collision, and we all suffer the consequences.
Final question for our author of the week, Stephen Mosier, the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. As we watched the pandemic unfold and different municipalities handled it differently. In the beginning, there was sort of this agreement, all right, well, let's just kind of shut everything down for a couple of weeks, flatten the curve. And then some began to assess whether that seemed to work or make sense. And you had somewhat along political lines, DeSantis and some of these others, Kristi Noem, that were like, okay, a lot of these shutdowns, this doesn't seem to be working. And then anytime there was any ability to trace a COVID outbreak to somebody in a red state, there seemed to be a great need to make sure everyone knew that. We had to figure out exactly where it came from. But when it comes to the actual origin, China, there seems to be a total, complete lack of any interest in making that determination and holding anyone accountable. Why is it that at least whether it's the government as a whole or just the current administration seems totally indifferent to China's responsibility when it comes to all of these potentially unnecessary millions of deaths across the globe?
Well, I think there are several answers to that question. There's a lot of communist Chinese money being thrown around in the United States. It has a lot of lobbyists, de facto lobbyists in Washington, D.C., including some people who actually worked for China in the past and made money from China in the past, who are in the White House or who are closely related to people in the White House, including people in the Oval Office. We all know that now. We all know that Hunter Biden was in business with China. So I think there's a reluctance on the part of the Biden administration to hold China accountable. But there's a lot of money to be made. I mean, the big pharma made $100 billion from selling vaccines. $100 billion. That's real money by anyone's account. And, of course, the federal government, the CDC and the FDA, people seem to be more interested in their post-retirement jobs with big pharma than they are in getting to the truth about the COVID virus. And then at the center of the web lurks Dr. Anthony Fauci, who funds most of the virology labs around the world, receive some funding directly or indirectly from Dr. Fauci. And in the beginning, he put out the word. We know from his emails, he put out the word that this did not come from the lab. Everybody get on board. It came from nature. It was a zoonosis. So when I wrote that it probably came from the lab in February of 2020, I was denounced as a conspiracy theorist. The real conspiracy theorist, of course, is 81-year-old Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, again, Stephen Mosier, the president of the Population Research Institute, leading authority on China in the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Great interview. Thanks.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.
Your voice is needed.
The American people have to pull their heads out of their keisters.
Now more than ever.
And start thinking like responsible Americans.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
No, I can't. Got a Hero's Breakfast that's coming up tomorrow, friends. No, I can't. Come on by, Scramblers. Republic Road and National will do the show live. And also, if you are a veteran, Scramblers, Air Services Heating, Cooling, All Service, Plumbing, Delta Roofing is going to buy you breakfast. How about them apples? They're delicious. So we'll see you tomorrow morning. All right, we've got traffic. A look at the weather here. Showers, storms to come. Better temperatures, if you like cooler weather anyhow. All in moments, I'm Nick Reed. Kind of a pleasant song.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1. Because I know I got you, and you know
you got me. We got everything we need. The First Alert forecast sponsored by Navant, employee benefits that work. So it's going to be partly sunny today. Showers and thunderstorms are likely with a high of 89. Scattered showers and storms tonight, low of 70. And then showers and storms Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with highs in the upper 70s to lower 80s. Sarah Myers.
Did you get any rain yesterday?
Yeah, it downpoured.
You know, I jinxed myself. We got just like the tiniest bit, and I took a photo of my garden. I'm like, yes, we're getting some much needed rain. And then it stopped.
Well, I called for it because I got my truck detailed inside and out. And so then it poured. No, I mean like hard. In fact, at one point, the girl child, she's like, man, that was violent rain.
Because
I mean, we were dry. And it was like those huge drops.
Right.
Where at some point you wonder if it's actually hail because it's just so loud. And it didn't go on and on and on, but it was a good drop of rain.
Well, I'm not going to jinx myself, but I really do need some rain.
Surely. I mean, with this forecast, just straight up saying.
I thought we were going to get some.
Yeah, well.
I know. Well, speaking of rain, if you find yourself with a leaky roof with all of the rain, have no fear because you can call the Pyramid Roofing Company. Now, the Pyramid Roofing team, they have been providing top quality roofs since 1992. They are veteran supported, veteran operated. They love to give back to our veterans, our first responders, as well as our educators. And if you do find yourself in a roofing situation, give them a call today. They can come out, give you a free estimate, get up on your roof, give you an inspection, tell you what you do need and what you don't need. Maybe you don't need a whole new roof. Maybe you just need a roof repair. Either way, the Pyramid Roofing Company can come out, assess the situation, and tell you exactly what it is that you need. Now, if you do need the new roof ASAP, give them a call today. You can find their contact information housed at ksgf.com under the Sarah's Endorsements tab.
The numbers came out, and we are in a recession. The U.S. economy shrinking in the spring for the second consecutive quarter, meeting the criteria for recession. Now, as you know, this is something that the Biden administration recognized they had created and began redefining recession. Everyone has agreed what recession means. Years and years and years and years, through administration after administration after administration, the declaration of a recession was after two consecutive quarters of economic shrinkage, if you will. That's just how it's always been. Of course, now they're like, well, that's not really what it's been. And it's with great frustration. That now I understand the media on the left is also trying to run cover for the Democrat policies in the recession by saying that technically it's not really a recession and pretending. And these are all the same people, by the way, that had no problem declaring things recessions whenever they were Republican presidents under and frankly, even Democrat presidents who dealt with two quarters in a row of this fiscal situation. But they have just become such activists that the thought of actual journalism and honesty is not something that even crosses their mind any longer. But what really frustrates me is when you have outlets like Fox News that are supposed to be fair and balanced, that at least they treat the redefining of economic terms as if it is a matter of opinion ultimately, and well, there's two definitions. And I say that because of this headline. U.S. economy enters technical recession after growth tumbles 0.9% in the second quarter. And they write that the U.S. economy shrank in the spring for the second consecutive quarter, meeting the criteria for so-called technical recession. It's not so-called. It's not technical. It is recession. But because the Democrats have gone out and they've started saying, well, I mean, maybe technically, but in reality, it's not really a recession because things are really awesome. And that term is to be used when things are bad. And because things are wonderful, they're fantastic, everything's fantastic, then recession, maybe technically, but it doesn't actually really apply here. And so then for outlets, you know, to at least observe the lunacy of the other media outlets and the Democrats claiming that this actually isn't a recession. And I imagine we'll start to see news stories with it in quotes, as if recession is just now all of a sudden a matter of opinion that really doesn't have any true definition and it's in the eye of the beholder. But here's the thing ultimately, as frustrating as it may be, it is not only going to not help those who are responsible for the recession, I believe it is going to hurt them. Because if there's anything that is more frustrating than being in a difficult position, it is the people who are responsible for fixing it or helping it, treating you as if it's not really a problem after all. Think about any time you have had to deal with customer service because you had a legitimate issue or problem. And you are essentially told that it's not really a problem, that you're interpreting things wrong. And the ultimate presentation is actually everything's fine. This is more of a you problem. I mean, does that not make the situation worse? In fact, you know, it's interesting if you deal with customer service, particularly over the telephone, and this was more noticeable prior to so much of it being done digitally. But it became very clear at one point, I remember when this was occurring, that research was done that showed ultimately when dealing with unhappy customers, they wanted to feel as if you at least appreciated their problem. That the thing that really ticked off an unhappy consumer was a dismissive attitude, was a sense that the consumer would get that the person who is supposed to be helping them doesn't really have an appreciation for the plight that the consumer's in. And it was clear that research had been done on this because all of a sudden when you would sit on hold with customer service, you got the, your call is very important to us. And anytime somebody would pick up, it was almost overboard with making sure you, oh, I understand and appreciate your problem. And, you know, and it was like, okay, I see what you're doing here. You're patronizing me. You're patting me on the head, telling me you understand and how much you appreciate my problems. And that was because people cannot stand being dismissed. People recognize things happen. The world isn't perfect. Life doesn't always go the way that it is planned or the way that someone sets up the expectation. And when it does occur, what people do want is for you to remedy it. If somebody makes a purchase of something that is under some sort of warranty or, you know, it's got a guarantee to it and something goes wrong, the expectation is the people who made the guarantee are going to say, we're really sorry about this. You are right. You know, this is why the guarantees exist. You are going front of the line. Our number one goal is to make this right. That's what people expect. What we get from Democrats right now is the absolute opposite. They accept no responsibility, not their fault, everyone else's fault. I mean, think about it in terms of customer service. And you're trying to, you were promised a service and you did not get the service that was promised. In fact, you got the opposite. Let's say you hired some company to clean your carpets, and they promised that they would do the best job possible. Their competitors were the reason that they needed to come clean your carpets because they destroyed your carpets, and they were going to come make them so much better. They guaranteed it, and then they come and they do your carpets, and they're worse than before. You're going to pick up the phone and call them. Now imagine that scenario and imagine the customer service at the carpet company treating you the way the Democrats, who promised, put us in charge, we'll make things better, are treating the American people in terms of their concerns about the economy. Number one, it's not their fault. Well, that's not our, we didn't do that. Number two, tell you that a lot, there's nothing they can really do about it. Sorry. You know, it's not our fault. This happened, that happened. It was beyond our control. Don't know what to tell you. Then they try to tell you that actually the carpets are really clean. And they're cleaner than they were before. And that you are just getting misinformation and you know, you just don't appreciate what goes into carpet cleaning. That there's so much involved in carpet cleaning, and on top of that, they challenge your definition of clean. Well, technically, and now you know. Now we're not the ones who, of course, developed the term clean when it came to our guarantee that your carpets would be more clean than they were with the competitor. But you know, experts, when it comes to the real definition of clean, yeah, it's a little more complex than the definition that you're accustomed to. You know, where it looks cleaner and it smells cleaner and there's less dirt and the stains are up. That, you know, those definitions, yeah. So, in reality, it is clean. It's just not what you interpret it as being clean. I mean, that is how they're dealing with this economy. And that's how they're dealing with us. And so, the upside to having to listen as a citizen to this madness of denial from Democrats that it's not their fault, that we don't understand how it actually is good in terms of the economy. We don't really appreciate it. And how, well, the definition of recession actually isn't the definition of recession. All of these things, that's all the madness of that. If you step back and you think about the reception of the average American person, and it does not help them. It doesn't help them any more than the customer service rep that you call because your service that was guaranteed did not come through, and they blame the other guy. They claim you don't know what you're talking about, you don't appreciate the job they're doing, and that the terms of the guarantee, such as really clean, aren't really what you think that they are. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Don Carriker, iwantagreathomeloan.com. All of your home loan needs, easy process. It begins with iwantagreathomeloan.com. My own brother reached out to me asking, saying, yeah, Dad said that you had a friend that did this sort of thing. I said, yep, go to iwantagreathomeloan.com. Send him the link. That is your inside VIP route. And it's set up for everybody. You enter some basic information that they need, and then Don or Anthony or Alex Carriker will get back with you and say, all right, well, here's some additional information. And they have an app now. It makes all this, it's even more advanced than when I did it. Makes it as simple as can be, which, of course, is the purpose. Expedites things as quickly as possible, which, of course, is part of the purpose. And then they make determinations as to what all is available for you. And they do more than that. They evaluate, all right, what's your current situation? Let's look at your debt-to-income ratio. And, well, you got over here credit card usage that's at 12%. You know, all right, well, what if they, you know, if you paid $300 off on that? And that's specifically what happened to me. I had some I recall if it was a credit card or loan or something, and just a couple hundred dollars putting down allowed me to improve the interest rate, which, of course, has saved me tremendously. I want a great homeloan.com because you do. North Korea has gone back to the pre-Trump era of threatening to destroy South Korea and attack the United States with nuclear weapons. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un announced that he is prepared to use his nuclear arsenal against the United States and has threatened to, quote, annihilate South Korea, according to North Korean state media. So you can bet it's probably pretty accurate. Kim made the remarks at an event Wednesday in Pyongyang commemorating the 69th anniversary of the armistice that ended fighting in the 1950-53 Korean War, noting that their armed forces are thoroughly prepared and so forth and so forth. And, you know, thank goodness we once again got rid of Donald Trump. The man that we were consistently told would bring us and did constantly bring us to the brink of a nuclear attack from North Korea. His name-calling of Kim Jong-un, calling him Rocket Man, was poking the bear. This madman is crazy. Oh, not Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump. How dangerous he made it for the rest of the world. Another demonstration that to the elites, it is not about results. Results are irrelevant. It's the pageantry. The theater. And because Donald Trump did not do it the way that you are supposed to, the way that it's always done, it did not matter that it resulted in Kim Jong-un ceasing the advancement of his nuclear ambitions. It did not matter that he ceased his rhetoric threatening to use nuclear weapons to annihilate South Korea and the United States. No. None of that mattered. It didn't matter that the testing stopped. No. The actual results, irrelevant. The pageantry is back, writing strongly worded letters to North Korea, because that's what you do see in a civilized world. In the meantime, North Korea has gone back to threatening to use those nuclear weapons. The stability that was achieved with North Korea and through other parts of this country, Afghanistan, another glaring example, has been obliterated by the current administration. The United Nations yesterday announced, to the shock, I'm sure, to the Biden administration, that the life of a woman in Afghanistan has become a torturous, horrific hell. Which is shocking because, as we all remember, Jen Psaki and Joe Biden and Anthony Blinken telling us over and over again that they put the Taliban on notice that we expected them to respect women's rights. I guess that letter was never received.